Good morning. Welcome to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. If you want to give us a call, the telephone number is 530-605-4567. To chat or stream live, go to readingteaparty.com and click on the radio link. And I just wanted to say that when you click on the radio link, that will take you to our media page that is created by our great friend Robert. You can find out all about our guests today, all the links to the topics that they're discussing, everything about our sponsors, and all of the shows that we have done in the past that are archived. So there's tons of information on our media page. Highly recommend that you check that out. And we'd love to hear from you, so don't hesitate to give us a call. Chat room is very active on We the People. We really enjoy that, so feel free to jump in and chat with other listeners. Today we've got a pretty full play. We've got Fred Kelly Grant and Sylvia Milligan. We're talking about land issues, private property rights. That's a pretty big deal, and if you're paying any attention to what's going on out there, you're going to find that people's property rights are being affected at every level, local, state, national, you name it. So good morning, Nate, our sound engineer.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
I missed you guys.
Yeah.
Glad to be back.
Pre-recorded show last week. It was kind of nice to sleep in. And Nate, what do you got going on Sovereign Minds tonight at 6 o'clock?
Oh, just the same old stuff. We're going to be talking about how the president doesn't want to go to Congress for war and, you know, things like that. They seem to be missing the Constitution.
So we're enjoying having war without Congress.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So we're skipping the three branches of government and the check and balance system. And good morning, Sylvia Milligan.
Good morning.
And you are with ROC?
Yep, Recreation Outdoors Coalition.
Great. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be tuning in with you in a few minutes. Want to thank our sponsors. We've got North State Tax Consultants. If you actually really like to keep your money and don't want to send too much of it to the government, Mark Kent and his wife Linda and his sister Linda are awesome. Give them a call at 221-0101. And Bill Miller Auto Transport. Bill's been in the business for 40 years. Anything that needs to be transported across the country or nationwide, on wheels or not, he's the guy to call. All that stuff on our media page. And good morning, Aaron.
I finally unpacked my stuff.
Yeah, Aaron was just running a little bit late, so I've been blabbering on.
I walk in the door, they're like, you're on.
She's plugged in now.
You know, we moved, and I'm discombobulated from that, but, you know, I went from... I mean, when you drive from Palisades Road to here, there are virtually no stoplights.
Yeah.
Like two or three. Well, when you drive up Highway 273, there's like 90
of them. Oh, 273 is terrible.
I hit every single one. It's like, okay, you're going to have to go without me.
And I'll bet the language was colorful on the inside of your truck.
No, you know, I try not to let inanimate objects unwrap me. I forgot my coffee. It's like, you know, but that's where Bill is. Bill went to go get coffee. Completely screwed up. So before I left the house, Orlene Curla called me from the Eagle Forum to remind me that I was supposed to call her. Yeah, which I didn't do because I forgot. Because she's going to promote the conference that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And we've got her on the phone. I thought it'd be better if she did it herself. Why not let her be the voice?
Excellent. Good morning.
Hey, Orlene.
Good morning, Erin. Thank you for allowing me to come on and make this announcement. You want me to tell it now?
Yep, you just go for it.
Okay. On June 17th and 18th, we are having a wonderful conference. This is our 10th annual state conference put on by Eagle Forum of California, and it's going to be in Sacramento at the Doubletree Hotel. And we have several outstanding, wonderful people from your own area that are going to be participating. You, of course. Aaron is going to be speaking on Saturday afternoon along with Senator Doug LaMalfa. They're going to be part of a panel that will actually give us hope. So we're ending with some hope in this conference.
And Orlene, this conference is on Agenda 21, correct?
Exactly. The theme of it is exposing the many tentacles of Agenda 21. And I understand your radio audience is very well aware of what this is, especially after having Rosa Corey on as a guest. And many of you have been fighting these battles for property rights, along with so many of the rest of us throughout the state. But we're trying to just talk about every aspect of Agenda 21 So we're starting off with the evening. Actually, we're starting with a lobby day Friday morning, where we're going to have a panel discussing just what is going on with redevelopment. And we have some outstanding panel members. Karen Klinger from Sacramento, who is one of the foremost authorities. She was actually able to get this stopped in her own neighborhood by making her neighbors become aware of it. But it's going on throughout the rest of Sacramento. It's going on in Santa Rosa, as you heard from Rosa. It's going on probably in every major city throughout our state. And so they will be talking about all the ramifications of redevelopment. And then we're going to take some material and go pass it on to many legislators during the lobby part during the afternoon. And then that evening at 5:30, there is a private reception where people can have the opportunity to have their picture taken with some of our honored guests, such as Phyllis Schlafly, who is the national president and founder of Eagle Forum, and also Sheriff Richard Mack. Has he ever come and spoken for your group in Reading?
He did, and it was such a long time ago that, it was back when I think our actual participating membership in the Reading Tea Party was like 12. I don't know. No, yeah. No, there were like 30 of us.
We just had him on our show.
Yeah.
You've really grown in numbers now. It's wonderful how you have grown.
Yeah, things have changed. And Nate.
For those who do not know him, he is the amazing, courageous sheriff in Arizona who took on the Brady Bill. The Brady Bill was passed just after the Oklahoma City bombing, and it would have made it so that every sheriff would have essentially had a registry for anyone that was buying a gun. The sheriff would have had to check them out and certified them, and he thought, this is ridiculous. This is taking away our Second Amendment rights. The sheriff should have nothing to do with this. And so he took the Brady Bill all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was ruled unconstitutional. So we really appreciate him. And he's going to be talking about understanding the role of the local sheriff in protecting our rights and fighting Agenda 21.
Very cool.
It is cool. And then the next days on Saturday, we're having another amazing lineup of speakers, starting with Bill Jasper, who writes for The New American. He's their senior editor, and he wrote a wonderful article that came out in February. So he's going to be giving the history and overall objectives of Agenda 21. Phyllis Schlafly is going to again speak, and she's now going to talk about social justice in place of equal justice, as they try to restructure our American representative government. As you know, Agenda 21 has these big three E's that are kind of all interlocking. One stands for equity, one stands for economy, and one stands for environment. So their definition, equity, is not true equal justice, it's social justice, which really is Marxism. And the economy part of it is not the free enterprise system, but it is redistribution of wealth, taking from those who have and giving to those who have not. And, of course, the ecology or the environment is animals have more rights than humans. So she's talking about one of those aspects, the social justice part. After her, Patrick Wood, he's the editor of the AugustReview.com, and he's a real authority on so many of these changes.
Oh, that's good. I wanted him as a speaker. I've talked to him a little bit online. Hey, Arlene, we've got to go to commercial here. Give us again the dates and how people can find out more about that.
All right. It is February 17th.
Wait a minute.
I was thinking of August. Anyway, it is June 17th through 18th. That's just in 2 weeks. It's a Friday and Saturday. They can find out more by going to our website, which is www.eagleforumofcalifornia.com. And I did want to mention that our luncheon speaker is Senator Tom McClintock, or Congressman Tom McClintock, and he's going to be talking about how AB 32 is fulfilling the objectives of Agenda 21 and causing millions of jobs to leave our state, as you know.
Is it ever?
That's right.
Ben?
And then following him, I will be speaking on Rosa Corey. If they didn't get to hear her on the radio, they'll get to meet her in person.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Yeah, we love her. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. We heard her a few weeks ago. She did a great job.
She was on fire.
All right. Well, we will list all that information on the website so people can go on there and get more info. And you guys gave me bunches of flyers to hand out tomorrow night. So thank you very much for calling in. And I will see you in 2 weeks, Miss Arlene.
Wonderful. Thank you, Erin, for allowing me the opportunity to announce this. And we're so looking forward to having you with us.
It was good to see you on Friday. Thanks for calling on your way through town.
You're welcome.
All right. See you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody. You're listening to We the People. We've got our act together now. Now we are We the Coordinated People here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country.
And I say, if you don't like it, you can leave. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Okay, so all of our regular listeners, you know the number, you know the website, you know how to chat
them
and stream.
Anyway.
You want to tell them anyway?
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
if you're new, go to readingteaparty.com. Click on the radio show and you will find our media page. Join us to chat or stream live, and the number to call is 605-4567. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on Mr. Fred Kelly Grant to talk about coordination efforts and private property rights. And Mr. Grant has been our guest numerous times, and we've talked a lot about what coordination is, what it does, why it's important. And I know that with the help of Sylvia Milligan in the North State and all of her alliances, Mr. Grant has made some headroads. And I think the two of you are going to kind of fill us in on what's new and what progress you've made. Good morning, Mr. Grant.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Wonderful. Thank you for calling in.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
So tell us, the last time we talked on this show, it was a historical program and an informative one, but you've actually been in the North State quite a bit lately, in California, and you've been working a lot with some of the local communities, and I believe you've made some progress. Can you fill us in on what you've done and what's been accomplished lately?
Yes, I'll be glad to. I want to start back a couple of months ago when I met with the chief of the Forest Service and his two top planners in Washington, D.C., to try to bring an end to the closeout of the forests in California. We were going about it from a county standpoint, and it appeared that we were going to have to file lawsuits for several of the counties, and so I kind of jumped over the middle management and went to the top, and explained to them how coordination was part of the law of the Forest Service, even in their own planning rules. And when I say coordination, as I've explained before on your program, that's simply a word that means a process. It's a process of communication. The real importance of it is that through this process, the Forest Service or any federal agency has to keep aware of what local policies are and local economy and local culture. And then they have to try to make their actions consistent with that. Well, after meeting in Washington, D.C. in the first week of December, I went out to meet with the regional forester at their request, Randy Moore, and met with him in Vallejo. And before we were finished with the meeting, he had agreed that he would instruct his supervisors to follow the process that's laid out in their rules and in the statute, and that process is called by their own rules coordination. He did that, and we know for a fact that he did so instruct his supervisors. Still, it's been a little slow in developing because it's up to each county to contact the supervisor and say to them, you know, we know what you've been told, now you have to come do it. And that's been a little slow in coming. I was in Del Norte County. I will be working for their county up there in helping them force the issue with their forest supervisor. And we plan to do that. I met with their county council. I met with the supervisors. I met with the sheriff of Del Norte County, and they're all going to send a letter to the supervisor insisting that he do what his regional supervisor told him. And then when that, those letters are done, I'm going to send one to the chief of the Forest Service and say, at least one of your supervisors is not listening. But that it's such a great step in progress that we no longer have to fight the fight at the local level. If they don't come and deal with local government, then we know that the order came down for them to do it, and I can go right back to the top again. I also met with five sheriffs. Well, let's see. There's Siskiyou, Shasta, Humboldt, Josephine, Oregon, and Del Norte. Is that five? I think that's five counties. Five counties. There were two sheriffs and their captains there. And I met with them basically on the 10th Amendment and on the authority of the sheriffs to deal with the Forest Service and tell them that they've got to keep those roads open for matters of public safety. That was a very, very productive meeting.
Now, where was that one held? In Vallejo, did you say?
No, that was Del Norte.
Oh, Del Norte, okay.
In Crescent City.
Oh, in Crescent City, okay.
Yeah, because I know Sheriff Basenko here from Shasta County called me on the way home, and he was all excited.
Yes, they were. They I laid out for them what they all believed anyhow, but I was able to give them the legal basis for it in the 10th Amendment, and they really are quite excited about making this happen for their people.
That's cool. And are you helping them with the harbor over there?
Well, I went up to help with the harbor. Frankly, the Harbor Commission had voted a contract for me and had agreed on a retainer. And after I met for a couple of hours with their two chief staff one of their chief staff planner and their engineer, I told them that they were so comfortable in sitting and waiting for the state to tell them what to do that I didn't think I could do them any good. They're in a bureaucratic comfort position where they're content to sit and wait for the state to tell them what to do with all that silt that came in from the ocean. I will be helping the county and the sheriff with regard to their pushing on the Harbor Commission to get the harbor open. It's been 2.5 months since the tsunami. Santa Cruz and Brookings both went to work immediately to clear theirs without waiting for the agencies to tell them what to do and how to do it. And they're well on the way to getting a foothold on the crab fleet. So I'm preparing today a report to the Harbor Commission and pointing out to them where I think where I think perhaps they've gone wrong. But I can't help people if their staff is not willing to do the work. You know, a very, very good friend of mine has a saying that you never work harder than your client is willing to work.
Yeah, good point.
And you can't succeed when you're working for someone who is content.
No. Didn't work.
They need that harbor. I mean, it isn't like they have other options in Crescent City.
No, there is no other option. And I met with a group of very excited fishermen the day after, and I will be helping them, too, in their effort. They're closer to having an alternative for what to do and how to handle the planning of opening the harbor than is the staff of the Harbor Commission.
That's a bummer because I was at a Harbor Commission thing, I don't know, 6 weeks ago or so over there right after the tsunami, and just the kind of rules and stuff that the water quality guys wanted them to do, you know, hauling away all the silt. And, I mean, here this stuff comes out of the ocean, but now because it's in the harbor, it's hazardous waste.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Well, the problem is they're willing to sit and wait for the Water Resource Board, and they have no jurisdiction in the matter. None at all. They have no legal jurisdiction in that harbor. they're trying to assert themselves. They're trying to create a position in all of this, but they're playing with 52 deuces in their hand. They have absolutely no legal jurisdiction. And as I explained to the staff the other day, you don't deal with an agency like that. They're trying to experiment on Del Norte County and Crescent City, and it just isn't sensible to let yourself sit and be experimented on.
And what do you think the motivation there is? Just it seems easier to do that than buck the system?
Oh, sure it is. It's, you know, unfortunately, it's what they're doing is so similar to what the federal government does that vast inertia of the federal government where it's just so difficult to move them. And it's much easier to sit and wait, and when the agency tells you what to do, you do it without questioning. The problem is that in the ease of that, you may end up losing the economy of the entire area.
And Mr. Grant,
I fully believe, and I explained to them that what they have to do, what they should have done already, is decide on what their preferred alternative is. Where do they want all that mess dumped? And then they should go. They should put that in writing, and they should go about justifying that from the standpoint of speed, the economy, and a timeline, and science. And when they've done that, then that should be their position. But when you sit and say to a state agency that you really don't have a preferred alternative, they're going to tell you what they want to tell you.
Not good.
So it's disappointing, and I know it's disappointing for the fishermen up there. They were quite beside themselves.
I bet they were. They were beside themselves 6 weeks ago when we were there. So when I heard you were going over to help them, I thought, oh, good. Help's on the way.
One of the real bad things, too, is that it isn't just from 2.5 months ago. They just, within the last 4 or 5 months, just got the permits issued from the 2006 tsunami. So they've been sitting there for 4 to 5 years.
Brutal. We are going to take a quick break, thank our advertisers, come back with more of Fred Kelly Grant, and we might even hear from Sylvia, our silent...
But she's sitting here nodding, shaking her head.
Silent in-house guest.
She's making her own comments silently.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are listening to We the People here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com. If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
Don't let them kick your neighbor off his land. But this is where we gotta make a stand. The stewards of this land are mom and pop. The government couldn't run a soda shop. I said freedom, freedom. Watch it slipping away. I said freedom, freedom. A little bit more each day.
Okay, that is our own Michael Smith from PatriotMusic.com. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Call in at 605-4567 or go to Reading Tea Party, click on the radio link, and join the chat or stream live to listen to the show. So we're coming back with Mr. Fred Kelly Grant and Sylvia Milligan, and I thought I would start with you, Sylvia. You're encountering mixed feelings about some of the counties you're working in right now. They're coming forward, but you're holding your breath on their cooperation a little?
Well, on the them doing it the proper procedure is what I'm concerned
okay.
with. Yes, they've stepped forward and invoked coordination and say, gee, we really want to participate, but I'm concerned about the process that they're using.
Okay. And how is your communication with them?
Well, there are several counties that I have emailed two or three times and have gotten no response at all. But I know that they have invoked coordination, and I know that they have let other counties know they want to be part of a joint group, coalition to work on forest issues.
Okay. And are your private citizen coalitions growing?
Yeah, oh, okay. Most definitely. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's involved in the coalitions that you've got? What type of groups are participating, and what are the numbers looking like?
Oh, in Shasta County alone, we have better than 20 people, and they come from all walks of life. I mean, that's not just recreation. We only have one or two people, actually, from recreation on the committee. But we have people from businesses, from, you know, different entities that are really concerned about what's happening in the forest and how it's going to affect the people and affect their rights.
And they see the bigger picture. It's all about rights.
Correct. You know, for years, everybody thought when you said OHV that they meant, oh, that's those dirty, noisy quads and dirt bikes running through the woods. But an OHV is any vehicle, whether it's a motorhome, a high-clearance Jeep, passenger car that goes off of a paved road. Once you go off that paved road, you're an OHV.
Yeah, and that's a really important distinction, because people hear OHV, I always ask, when you know, if I said that the forest roads are being closed to OHVs, what is that? They go, oh, those are those dirt bikes. So I think that's really what people think this issue is about, which is why the public doesn't really mobilize on this. It's too bad they call them OHVs. It's too bad they don't.
I don't think that's an misnomer.
Do you think that was planned?
Could be.
Plus, you know, it also affects anybody that goes out and travels out there, because you cannot pull more than one car length off of the road. And I've been told, I was contacted by a guy out of Lassen County and said that they actually came, two of them, two from the forest, and measured off of what they said was the edge of the road, one car length, and gave them a ticket because they were more than one car length off of the road.
I don't think they have enough to do.
Yeah.
Who's got time?
A whole group of people who need a hobby.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Grant, we had a...
Add something to
yes,
what
please
Phil
do.
Has just said about when you said, was it planned? But let me tell you that right now in Del Norte County, they've just received notice from the Forest Service that they are entering into a restoration, a road and trail restoration project. What would that mean to you?
Well, a road restoration project would mean that the road was going to be improved?
I would think it'd be repaired.
Actually, what it means is that they're going to close them down and restore them to the pre-European existence.
Wow. Kind of like rewilding.
That's right. Yeah, that's what restoration means. And so the general public, if they saw that, they'd think, well, maybe they've changed their position. Maybe they're going to reopen some of the roads, but not so.
Huh, so restoration is all about going backwards, not about
that's right.
restoration for future use.
That's right.
Huh. Yeah. Well, how clever of them.
Now, we had a question.
Yes, it is.
We had a question in our chat room, Mr. Grant, regarding the CFLA voluntary easement program in the Central Valley. Do you have any comments on that?
The conservation easement program?
In the Central Valley, I think they're proposing voluntary easements in the foothills around the Central Valley. I did read about that in the newspaper recently. I don't know a lot about it, but one of our chat room visitors asked if you could comment on that or if you knew anything about that.
Well, you're going to have to take my comment with a grain of salt, because I'm not familiar with that particular project, but I'm going to make some remarks about conservation easements as such. They're a very dangerous control of your property. You have to be very, very careful before you enter into any kind of a conservation easement for your property, whether it's to get a whether it's to get a benefit for use of water or whatever it is, whenever, if this is a conservation easement that you enter into with the government, what it means is that at any point, what you have to do is promise that you will use your land only in a certain way, and that you won't let it be used in any other way.
Now, the description on this one is it's a voluntary easement program intended to protect working landscapes on range lands surrounding California's Central Valley.
Okay, that's it. That's yeah. what I'm talking about. Those conservation easements, the government can watch, or whoever, land trust, private land trust, can watch what you do with your land, and if you change in any way the way you're using the land, let's say you decide that you're grazing a certain number of cattle, and you all of a sudden need to increase that, and you've satisfied yourself that you can increase it on the forage that you have, and you do change it, the holder of the trust can come in and declare that you're in breach because you have promised to use it in a particular way and no other way. I can show you a case where conservation easement was entered into by a rancher, and their child had decided through an FFA program in the high school to raise goats for the fair. The land trust wouldn't let them do that. They declared that that was in breach. The horror stories could go on for the next 7 days, and I wouldn't quit breathing. Wouldn't quit talking and telling you about them. Conservation easements are fine if you need operating capital, but you have to have the best of attorneys read them, and I don't mean just any attorney. I mean somebody who understands property, who understands what you're doing, and they have to read those clauses to you because the clauses are so general and yet so convoluted that what you're doing is signing away the control of your property.
Not the smartest thing you could do.
No. If you're doing it for, I've always warned people, if you're doing it in order to get operating capital, you ought to talk to a good accountant and make sure there isn't some other way that you can function without giving up the control of your property. Many years ago, there was an article written, which we're making available now through Trade America Foundation, which I do want to talk to you about before we finish today.
Yes, please.
In that article, the statement was made that for world government to succeed, the paranoia of American people about private property rights had to be overcome. And it would be impossible for the government to buy all the private property that was needed by eminent domain, so they had to find a better way to do it, a cheaper way. And he suggested conservation easements. He said that once they're purchased, that then the holder, the owner of the easement, can begin to make management of the land and operation of the land so inconvenient and so harsh that eventually the landowner himself decides that he wants out, and at that point no one will buy his land because of the very harsh conservation easement, so the land trust can buy it at a bargain basement price and then sell it to the government at a cheaper price.
And they buy it with what? This is my favorite part.
The Nature Conservancy, for example, often buys it with federal dollars. And they do it this way. They bought a ranch in Owyhee County in Idaho in order to put it out of the grazing business. And let's say they paid $1 million for it. Now, it was close to that, but it was it wasn't exactly $1 million. We'll say $1 million. They then turned around and sold a recreation easement to the Bureau of Land Management for $750,000, which made back all but $250,000 of it. And that $750,000 that they got from the BLM, they were able to bank, and they will use that to buy other private property at some point in the future. So it's a matter of federal dollars being used to buy the private property and then being used to pay back the company that uses the federal dollars in the first place.
It's just...
And, you know, I think what's scary is that so many people never actually can fathom the idea that there is this insidious plan to steal private property.
And it's such a brilliant plan to use our money.
Sylvia and I have worked together for very closely for some time now. I think if you were to ask Sylvia, she would probably tell you that when these travel management plans first came out, she thought that they were for the benefit of the public and for the benefit of the forests. And for a very short period of time, she probably thought that her people would have real influence with the Forest Service in explaining to them the usefulness of some of the roads, and that they would say, okay, if they're useful, we'll leave them open.
What do you think, Sylvia?
Correct. I knew there was a problem coming 4 or 5 years ago, and I tried to warn people something's coming down the pike. But we did feel that the Forest Service kept assuring us, oh, we're going to work with you. We're going to listen to you. You bring in all your favorite roads. And Recreation Outdoors Coalition went out and worked with a number of recreation groups, with individuals saying, you know, give us your favorite places to ride. Tell us where you go, because we want to make sure these roads are put on the map so that they're there. Well, those are the ones they closed.
Wow. On that happy note, we're going to thank our advertisers here just a wee bit early so that we have plenty of time here at the end of the hour. Hear more from Fred Gilligrant
and Sylvia Milligan.
So you can check your wallets and find out where your tax dollars are going. You're listening to We the People here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
For you folks, I know who. Our great patriots at the Reading Tea Party, sponsors of We the People. Hey, give us a call, 605-4567, or go to readingteaparty.com, click on the radio link, and join the chat room. It's always alive and really pretty fun to read. Or stream live if you're sitting at your computer and drinking your coffee. So we're back with Mr. Fred Kelly-Grant and Sylvia Milligan, and we're talking coordination, land grabs, and road closures. So, Mr. Grant, where would you like to take us before the end of the hour?
Well, I'd like to talk a bit about the foundation that's been that we've created called Trademark America. One of my clients, who my daughter-in-law Stacy was working with, wanted to make a donation to start a foundation, and she came and talked with me, and I gave her the ideas that I've had for many years, if I'd had time to start one. And one was to establish a think tank outside the District of Columbia that focuses on private property rights and on local government and coalitions of citizens that focuses on the 10th Amendment, which, of course, reserves the powers of government to the local governments and to the people. A focus on the preparation of a law journal that presents in a scholarly fashion the kinds of theories that judges would need in order to decide to make their decisions, and to set up a funding mechanism, which is a 501c3 for tax deduction purposes, that would allow people to help us take on projects that otherwise we couldn't afford to do, such as the one that I announced in Reading some time ago for Siskiyou County, where we would focus on rebuilding the economy there, on trying to force the Forest Service to go back to basics and what Congress ordered them to do in the beginning and never has changed, and that is to log the forests, to clear them, to make them healthy, and to petition to delist some species that don't need listing, where the listing is putting an artificial clamp on economy and culture, such as the spotted owl and the coho salmon. At Foundation, we have formed the Council of Fellows, and we've just decided Well, Stacy and I have just decided we've got to present it to the board of directors that the first paper that we would, the policy paper that we would have prepared and present is on the dams on the Klamath River and on why they should not be removed. And the second one will be on the reason why the Endangered Species Act has been completely misapplied by the courts. The way we show that is to go back to the treaties upon which the Endangered Species Act is built. In each one of those treaties, in each one of those international agreements, there is a provision that whenever the protection of a species harms the culture or harms the economy of the local area or the culture of the local area, then something other than protection of the species has to be done. The species has to be moved, but never is the economy to be hurt. That was never made known to the courts when the environmental groups started going to court with NEPA and with the Endangered Species Act. So those two papers will be the first two policy papers that will be issued by the foundation.
Nice. And it's about time.
Well, it is.
It's about time.
We've given up the field for 40 years to the other side, and it's time that the people of this country, the working people, the property owners and working people, get their rightful position.
It's funny. I had a little run-in with a bank recently, and I was at the courthouse on Friday, and the attorney that was standing in for the bank, He, I said, this stuff is just crazy. I mean, what are these people doing? And the guy said, you know, we're going to be in a lot of trouble if the people ever rise up and fight these guys. And he said, but I don't know if they ever will. I thought, well, we're doing our level best.
Well, you know, George Washington said, and many others, but Washington is the first one of our leaders who said it publicly in his letters, and that is that the American people will do the right thing if they are informed, if they have the information and have accurate information. That's what the popular media does not provide, and frankly, few of our elected politicians provide it. And I felt that our foundation could go a long way in providing the facts and provide the correct information to the people.
Well, I think that correct information, you know, it's interesting. It all depends. We were talking during the break. You know, how do people participate in this kind of stuff and feel good about it? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, do they think they're going to be able to take their kids? Like, if you just stick with the forest issues. Do they think they're going to be able to take their kids in the forest because they work for the Forest Service? So it's not going to be a big impact on their life?
Or do they actually believe what they're told and are incapable of critical thinking on their own?
They look at things from a completely different agenda. I often say to the people that I speak to in speeches that my experience dealing with organized crime when I was chief of the organized crime unit in Baltimore is very helpful in dealing with the federal government. because they're much
okay,
the same.
That deserves a really big laugh.
they're
a sad
much
analogy.
The same from the standpoint that the orders are given from above, and the working people, the people on the ground, are not allowed to think about it. They just go about following their orders. Those orders from above are all designed for control. When you look at any of these things, the species actions, the closing of the forests, the attempt to take cattle off the public lands, the EPA regulations that threaten farming today, they're all for land control, land and water control.
So these employees of these agencies, they're in on the agenda, or they just actually really just believe what they're told?
Well, in many cases, it's neither of those. In many cases, it's just that they don't believe what they're told. They're just told. They follow. We have found over the past few years that some really very good employees, particularly in the Forest Service, have taken early retirement over and over and over again. You'd be surprised how many people just this last week up in Del Norte County came to me and said, listen, I used to work for the Forest Service. If you need any help at all, you let me know.
Yeah, we've actually run into, at least I have, many people that have worked for some of these agencies. They've left them, and they are actually ashamed that they worked for them because they say that it's nothing. It doesn't resemble the agency that they went to work for 30 years prior, and they're embarrassed by what it's turned into.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and almost every one of them has useful information for us because they are the kind of people who really were working toward a healthy forest.
You're right. Well, Sylvia, what have you got to say for yourself? You're awfully quiet over there.
Well, one thing that I think, too, is I think a lot of the Forest Service people have such a little small piece of the pie that they work on that they don't. A lot of them don't see the holistic mm-hmm. picture of mm-hmm. what's coming off. And if you tell them, they look at you like, what?
Yeah.
You know. Oh, well, that's disconcerting.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, they may be pigeonholed into a particular project or a particular...
job.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. job description that doesn't really allow them the ability to see the whole thing.
So for all the people who really don't use our forests and think this sort of... it applies to them, but really it's a peripheral issue. Either Sylvia or Fred, how would you guys personalize that for them? I mean, why should everybody care about it?
Let's take everybody cares about water. Everybody has to use water for drinking water or for whatever, for irrigation, whatever they use it for. One of the things that happens when you close down the forest, when you close people out of it, you quit managing it, and that's one of their purposes, is so they don't have to manage the roads.
Does that mean we get to stop paying taxes?
You don't manage the forest. And when you don't, the watershed quits producing water. There is a hydrologist expert in Colorado who worked for the Forest Service for many years, and he's done a paper. He retired for the same reason we talked about. He's done a paper that shows that if they had done any management at all on the Colorado front, which is just east of Denver, there would be plenty of water for the Denver metropolitan area to provide the millions of cubic feet of water that the governor of Colorado sold to the Secretary of Interior to provide water for the whooping cranes in Dakota, and also for irrigation for the farmers out of the pumps, pumping out of the river. Well, guess which one of the three is not being done? The farmers are not allowed to pump. And you can drive for miles and miles and miles and find farms that were the most productive in the nation, and they're sitting dry. People have gone out of business because they can't pump water. So everything that an agency does to shut down its use, if you've never been in a forest in your life, if you've never been there to picnic, if you've never been there on a Boy Scout encampment or anything else, know that when an agency controls that forest to the point of shutting the people out, whatever you use on federal land can and probably will be next.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's just the beginning.
It is. It's just all part of... all part of a big picture, and it's funny because all the people who said that these types of things were conspiracy theories, there are so many of them that for it not to be a coordinated effort would be actually the conspiracy theory. For these to be isolated incidents, mm-hmm. you'd have to really stretch to make that happen. Oopsie, we're up at 9 o'clock here. You've got a 5-minute break coming up, everybody. Grab some coffee and all that. We have another hour with Sylvia and Fred. And we're going to get into Trademark America and learn all about that. We'll be back with We the People here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.
Welcome back to the second hour of We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Going to repeat some information just in case you're just tuning in. If you want to give us a call, the number is 605-4567. To join us in the chat room or stream live, go to readingteaparty.com and click on the radio show link. And I want to tell you that that will take you to our great media page where you will find all of the information about today's guests. Any links to websites that they might mention, organizations they're involved in, we talk about our sponsors, and all of our shows are archived. So we're stock full of information. Definitely check out that media page and go to some of the archive shows and find out what's going on in your local community and your state and nationwide and all things political. So today we've got Mr. Fred Kelly Grant
and Sylvia Milligan, and we're talking about the Forest Service roads. The attempt to coordinate with the Forest Service, with our local agencies, and the attempt by the powers that be to kind of shut us out of the forests and kind of get us back into the cities where possibly they might have a little more control.
Come on, say it. They want us to live in rabbit hutches over a metro station.
They do.
Okay.
Little tiny places.
We had to bring that up.
Yeah. In fact, you sent me a link one time, Aaron. It was kind of scary.
Japan thing?
The Japan thing where this guy lived in 400 square feet.
Oh, no, it was like 340.
And they're showing how, you know, you can't have your kitchen table down at the same time as your bed, but, you know, you do have the option of one or the other.
No, he had this. It was really clever. I mean, if you had to live in 300 square feet, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It all converted. The walls slid around. They were all on tracks. And so you could turn the room into a living room, and then you turn the room into a kitchen. But the kitchen looked like the kitchen on an airplane, you know, which really isn't much of a kitchen.
Was the bathroom like an airplane bathroom?
You know, I don't remember the part about the bathroom. I think it's probably a community bathroom.
Point being, who wants to live in 380 square feet?
Point being, not me.
Yeah, jeez. So, welcome back, Sylvia, Mr. Grant. And do we want to talk more about...
We have Charles on line one.
And Charles is never lacking in thoughts and ideas and opinions. Good morning, Charles.
Or Russian words.
Dialect and analogies. Good morning, Charles.
Uh-oh.
He's gone.
He's gone. So we said Russian analogies and he disappeared.
So is Fred.
Oh, Fred's gone too. We disconnected everybody. Bye, everybody.
Well, Sylvia, you sent me some information on the email last night, updates on some of the counties. Why don't you touch on those a little bit?
Well, we're waiting for everybody to call us back.
last week, let me think, the 24th of May, I attended a meeting in Susanville with two board supervisors.
From Lassen County?
From Lassen County, a committee of concerned citizens who are on the coordination committee over there. And surprise, surprise, the Forest Service supervisor, Jerry Bird, showed up at the meeting. And it was an incredibly good meeting. I asked Jerry Bird during the meeting if his supervisor, Randy Moore, the regional forester, had contacted him and instructed him to work with the counties. And he told me yes. And he also shared with me that each of the forests in California, recently Tom Tidwell and Randy Moore had toured the north area up here because of all the concerns with the travel management plan. And he said that they discovered that, imagine this, that they have spent over $1 million per forest, and they have done a very bad job.
And now, when you say they've spent $1 million per forest, is that just their budget? I mean, what did they do with that $1 million? And is that a yearly budget?
No. That's what happened is most of that money came from our green sticker fund, the fund where we pay $25 a year to license or to allow our quads and dirt bikes to be out there in the woods.
Okay.
In California, California was the only state that did that, that gave the Forest Service all of this money.
And what did they do with it?
We don't know.
Really?
So there's no measurable result, nothing you can quantify.
No, there's no accountability.
They just gave him $1 million.
Mm-hmm. That's how it's always worked any place I've ever worked. You know, you just they just pay you and you just do stuff, and then when they ask you about it, and if you didn't do it, then
that's
you
okay.
know, nobody really follows up on it.
Yeah, they said that they did all the engineering, you know, on a number of the roads in the forest and found that they were not suitable for mixed use, but yet Plumas County had their engineers go out and do it, and they have a number of their county unpaved county roads that they've left open because the engineering analysis over there proved that there was no reason
to close the roads.
Yeah, to close the roads. So that makes you wonder what they're saying about the engineers.
Downright frustrating. Mm-hmm. Hey, we have recovered some of our phone calling ability here. So we have Charles on line one who had a question.
Good morning, Charles.
Or a statement.
Actually, there's a whole bunch of stuff coming up Tuesday.
Is this the Board of Supervisors or the City Council, Charles?
Both.
Okay, and this is regarding...
County budget hearings are coming up on Tuesday, and so the time you want, you know, to speak up on...
So Tuesday's a big...
counties involved in all this...
okay.
I got a bunch of stuff to talk about.
So Tuesday's a big day in local politics. Okay.
So I need to rattle through this quickly.
Okay, rapid fire us, Charles.
Okay.
In English. Just kidding.
No Russian.
Yes.
You just couldn't stand it, could you?
Well, at any rate, yeah, the county budget hearings are coming up, and that's where they go through the budget for all the county departments, including resource management and public health. Here's the time you might want to bring up health and all policies garbage. Aaron and I, we know quite a bit about that.
Let's not.
And resource management, they've been quite a bit involved in all this regional climate action garbage. And they're... part of the regional climate thing that they're starting to pump out now since the workshop, they want to put out this so-called, they want to promote the idea of mandatory energy conservation measures in the event that voluntary initiatives fail. I got an email from Gary Catt about that. He included one of their documents, and
I've seen that verbiage, Charles, and it's a little eerie when they say it's voluntary, but if you don't volunteer, then it's mandatory.
Well,
so it really negates voluntary.
Your guest, having has worked in, he's got some experience fighting the mob in his previous career, so. He can tell you what the organized crime definition of voluntary is. But also, the County Board of Supervisors is going to meet and on that same day as the Shasta County Water Agency. Take a look at the county agenda. And they're going to talk about the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, and they want to put... and. One of the things being discussed is some sort of habitat management thing or whatever. You want to read the staff report on that. I haven't quite read it yet, but I've looked at the description. It's something you want to look at. That's coming up tomorrow, too.
Okay, so people can ask... Okay.
I'm not done yet.
Oh, okay, Charles.
And,
I was just going to help folks.
I was
going to help people.
You have
find,
to have a commercial. Hurry!
Yes, I was going to help people find the link.
I can hold on. I can come back. I can hold on through the break if that's what you want.
That's what we want because the phones are ringing, but the lights aren't on, and you know, there's a lot of strange stuff going on here. We've created some bizarre electronic vortex.
Yeah, there's
in here.
Some RTPA stuff upcoming, and city council upcoming too, including the consideration of the charter reports.
Oh yeah.
After these messages.
After these messages. What are you trying to do? Horn in on my job there, buddy? Hey, you're listening to We the People here. We the People includes Charles, my able-bodied assistant there, here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Now, I don't know about you out there in radio land, but I believe everything that agencies and politicians tell me. Don't you? Not. Anyway, welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party.
You're so cynical.
Give us a call at 605-4567 or go to readingteaparty.com, click on the radio link, and join our media page for streaming live and chatting. So, Charles, in a minute and a half, wrap up what we got going on Tuesday so we can get back to Mr. Grant.
Yeah, and after they get through all that business, the county's going to meet as the RTPA, and there's a lot of SB 375 stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, well, we both know about SB 375, too.
Yeah, yeah, it's a derivative of AB 32.
Yeah, I know, it's sort of a Robin to the AB 32 Batman.
Yeah, something like that. Oh, yeah, you made a joke. That was good.
On to the city council.
Okay, so real quick, 30
city
seconds.
Council, they will consider the charter committee's report, and also they're gonna try to bring up the side agreement that was worked, the back room agreement, the side letter deal.
With the landscaping thing?
Right, which was not legally put together at all, because if it was put together legally, they would have met and conferred, as per Myers-Milius Brown, with the bargaining units. You know, city council would have done that,
They
would have come up with an MOU, and the MOU would have been ultimately ratified in open session, and none of that has happened, which, you know, gives you cause to question the legal validity of any agreement, and if an agreement is not legally valid, can it not be disavowed?
Exactly. So if you're anywhere in the Reading area, there's a bunch of stuff going on Tuesday.
Yeah,
and
keep your energy shots handy.
Yeah, and hey, you know what, Charles? If you email that to me, I'll make sure and get it all up on the event section of the website so people can check with that. And so
I'll have to email the agendas because if I email the staff reports, it would take up a lot of space.
Okay, forget that. Yeah, just email me the links and I'll put them up there. And all right, so I will see you later on.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for those updates.
All right,
see ya.
What's good on you?
All right, we're going to see if we can get Fred back on the line.
Fred, are you in there somewhere?
I'm here.
Oh, thank you for holding on.
That was bizarre.
We've been in telephone land today.
The lights were on, and literally no one was home. Then the lights were on.
Understandable. Yeah. I when they decided to break up the telephone system many years ago, I don't think it's ever fully recovered.
No. I don't think so. Back to tin cans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, so before we wind up press here, tell us about the new foundation.
Well, the foundation we've been in existence only about 2 months. We are incorporated under the laws of Idaho. We have 501c3 status with the IRS, which allows anyone who contributes to get a tax deduction for it. We're going to rely not on memberships, but on donations from people who want us to continue the kind of work that we've been doing. I will continue my private law practice so that I can lobby, but I'll also serve the foundation. Our website, which is trademarkamerica.org, will be up and running. It's there now, but it'll be officially opened on Flag Day, June the 14th. We're inviting as many as 20 or 30 writers to participate. Aaron is one of the members of our Council of Fellows. Those fellows will be the ones who will decide and recommend to the directors what kind of position papers that we will be issuing, and we're going to issue the kinds of papers that can give the people and coalitions of citizens the kind of scientific and informational base they need to take their case to the federal agencies. So I'm very excited about it. I think it's something that's been needed for a long time. I've had a dream of that law journal for many, many, many years, and now we're going to make it work, and it may well be the first experimental online law journal or electronic law journal that's ever been created.
Oh, that's cool. You know, there's so many things that are changing. You know, so many things that have been in existence for a long time that have not fully gone online. And that's
right.
Really where people, you know, I caught myself when we were moving, you know, looking for things. I was always looking in the yellow pages. I'm so used to looking in the yellow pages, and I don't use them very often just because, I don't know, I know where the businesses are. But I was looking for services, and I looked in the yellow pages, and a guy that I work with looked at me and said, why don't you just look online? And I thought, oh, yeah. How weird.
Right.
It's like, for me, yellow pages hadn't caught up. You know, hadn't become an online thing, but Law Journal, that would be available to everyone then. Maybe,
that's exactly right.
Maybe people would actually read it.
And read it at their leisure. That's the thing, that not have to go to a law library to get it. I regret the passing of the newspaper, the old-fashioned paper newspaper. I love to peruse a newspaper. The New York Times, people have asked me many times what papers I read. And they're always astounded when I tell them the New York Times and the Washington Post. And they think that I would be reading the conservative newspapers, but the reason I read the others is that I have to know what they're doing. I have to know what they're saying.
Yeah. True story. You can't respond if you don't know.
It's
kind of like we encourage people always to look at a variety of sources of news and information. Because if you're hooked on just one thing, you're not news anymore. I remember when I used to teach writing, and if you were going to do a reporter-style paper, you had to be missing from the article. You know, when you wrote it, I shouldn't be able to have any flavor of you.
Right.
And that somehow has gone away.
Yes, it has.
Now everything is the flavor of the reporter.
That's right. One of the things, you know, I've on Memorial Day, I heard the vice chairman of the Army talking on CNN television, and he was talking about the unfortunate position we find ourselves in of not having enough research on the brain to help our injured troops who are coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan, who've suffered brain injuries. Through concussions and so on that come from these awful bombs they use over there. And he was talking about the fact that we don't know enough about the brain, and that the brain is the finest computer ever existing. Well, in order to make your brain work well, you have to let it take in information from all kinds of sources, including those sources that you really don't agree with. But you have to read them to find out, in order to be able to answer the position well.
We actually have a caller online, too, that has a question or comment. We kind of forgot. It's written on the whiteboard here.
And we hate to interrupt. So, Don, are you still there?
Well, I'm still here, I think.
Well, good morning, Don.
Good morning.
So you're on the air.
How are you, Elizabeth? Yeah.
Wonderful.
Also, I would like to bring up something that Charles forgot to mention. As you know, I, as a street master, I do some things on my own, separate from the Tea Party. And I'm holding a rally at the city council meeting just before it to try and get the city council to have a homeless camp someplace in the city. And we're asking anybody who supports getting such a place to get them off the street to please come to the rally at 5:15, and at 5:55 we're going inside, and about a quarter after I'll be speaking to the city council.
Okay. And this is tomorrow?
So,
Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
I mean, yeah, Tuesday, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Right. I thought today was
Monday.
And I'll
see you two tomorrow night. Yeah.
You got it. Thanks, Don.
Will do. Thanks, Don.
Bye-bye.
So, before we go to break, Mr. Grant, I would like to know if you encounter as many people through your travels and all the counties that you work in the different states that are as committed and coalition building as Sylvia is. Because I know that, I mean, she's made this her life's work. I'm wondering if you're finding like partners everywhere you go.
Well, not to the degree of Sylvia. Sylvia is the, well, she's the epitome. I don't know when Sylvia has time to do the things she does.
Have you seen her car?
Oh, yeah. Sylvia's very invaluable to us in the foundation.
She can get it all done because it's all in her car.
she showed me that. She was invaluable to Stacy and I even before the foundation. But, yes, in Del Norte County, for example, Mary Wilson and Helen Ferguson, they're in the same mold as Sylvia. You find that and part of the reason is because she's so good at networking that she's been able to get people involved. We have people in Montana that are working very hard now. You know what has happened is this, I think. Through our seminars on the 10th Amendment, by the way, Stacy just called me and told me that I was supposed to mention our seminar that's coming up in Seattle on August the 12th and 13th on the 10th Amendment. We've given three of those, and they've been very well attended. We have one in Seattle on August 12th and 13th. One of the things that I find is that when people realize that there is hope, that there is something they can do as individuals, rather than being told, you know, we've got to change the Congress, we've got to change... That's such an impossible task. And, oh, not impossible. We have 55 new members of the House of Representatives who have made a tremendous impact there. But it's the kind of thing that a lot of people think there's nothing I can do as an individual, and that's just not true. And we're able to show them how they can by working with a coalition of citizens of like mind, how they can persuade their local government to take a stand, how they can even use their own position as a coalition to approach the government, the local government agencies and the state government agencies to make a difference. And I think when people feel that hope, then they get active and they're ready to get active and follow group leaders like Sylvia.
Yeah, I think change has to start with ourselves.
Yeah,
it
absolutely does, and it has to become personal for everybody or they... Or they don't take time out of their day to participate. Hey, we're going to take time out of our program here, unfortunately, fortunately because there are advertisers, but unfortunately because we want to talk to Fred some more. We'll come back with the last half hour of We the People here in just 2 minutes. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com. If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more.
For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Hello again. We're back. The last half hour of We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party.
So we're closing up on our second hour, and we've got Mr. Fred Kelly Grant and Sylvia Milligan joining us today. Sylvia whispered in my ear during our break that she would like to give a little promo for Mr. Grant and tell the folks how influential he is, and maybe we can find out where to send some donations.
Oh, yeah, good one.
Fred Kelly Grant has had a hand in almost everything positive that has gone on here, and without him, we would not be where we are today. We would not be having these forest supervisors come back to us and say, we'd like to work with you. We realize we made a mistake. So I can't enough say how wonderful Mr. Grant is, and this new foundation that he has created is going to be extremely beneficial to all American people. And I can't say enough too about how it's not free. What he does is not free. It costs him money. It costs him
neither
money.
Is freedom, right?
Right, right. Just like myself, it comes out of your pocket when there isn't enough money to pay the bills. And I would like to see Fred give us an address where people can send donations, because, you know, we all need money to keep going.
Okay, so Fred, give us all the info.
Well, I will, but I have to thank Sylvia. You know, all I can do is provide the information. It takes people like Sylvia to make it happen, but
true.
We are increasing the numbers of those. www.trademarkamerica.org or Stacy, STACI, at trademarkamerica.org.
Now, people can make payments online?
Yes, they can.
And that is actually on the website. So
that's
if people have clicked on this show, they'll see that on there.
And then it's for Post Office Box 1758, Nampa, Idaho, 83651.
Okay, so folks, and get out your checkbooks or go online.
Yeah, and it's just going to take a lot of, if you guys got $1 million, you take it, but this is going to be a lot of small contributions.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty standard. I've often thought that if I had more luck, I would buy lottery tickets on a regular basis and then contribute the winnings to the foundation, but it would be a waste of my money, because I don't think I have ever even... The biggest win that I ever had on a lottery was $7, and I had spent $10 to get it. So.
Negative cash flow.
You know, there are so many issues in California right now, for example, that are plaguing the people, and we're beginning to get a hold of them with information that where we can hopefully make a move on them. One is, of course, the thing that Craig Chenoweth and Mark Baird and Liz Bowen have made such a great stride against up in Siskiyou County, and that's the incidental take permit that the state wants to force on farmers or ranchers in order to divert water for irrigation or for cattle watering and so on. That's just an uncanny way of getting governmental control over water usage and over water rights. And so many people don't know what the impact of an incidental take permit is. And they think, well, it's just another cost, I might as well pay it. An incidental take permit means that you're admitting that you're violating the Endangered Species Act. What that is a process by which you are allowed to violate it, until and unless the agency decides to quit allowing you to not be punished for it. If you take out an incidental take permit, you're admitting that by diverting the water to your irrigation use, you are harming the coho salmon. So that if, for example, you ever decided to quit using that water, or if they decided to cut your water off altogether, and they decided that you had to do something more than what you had been doing to help the salmon, you would have no choice but to do what they said because you've already admitted you're violating the law. It's an extremely clever trap that's been set.
Yeah, and it's always proposed as, hey, it's just a, what was the thing with the water board when they were up there? It's just a permit. There's no fee. And the people up there in Scott Valley were like, are you kidding?
Yeah, that's right.
Not our first rodeo.
The big fee comes in their control over you after you've admitted that you've violated the statute. You know, you mentioned something earlier about how these things, we would have thought at one point that they were all conspiratorial. 10 years ago, I would have believed that the Trans-Texas Corridor could never happen. I remember talking to a lady in New Jersey when I was back there at a national conference in D.C., and she told about how she and her husband lost their business. They had a very lucrative business where they ran a body shop and a parking lot right at the place where the ferry came in with commuters to New York. They would get off the ferry with their cars. They'd park them at their parking lot. They'd have them work on the cars and service it. The city decided to take the business because it was blighted. Now, this was one of the most progressive businesses in the city. They had a higher profit level than most businesses in New York, but the city decided to call it blighted because they wanted to put in a business that was going to pay the city more money. And as these people put up their placards to ask their customers to protest this, all of the customers kept telling them, oh, they won't do that. The city can't do that. They can't do that. They won't do that. And on the very last day, people were saying, oh, they won't do it. They won't do it. The city can't do that. And she told me that even after they did, after the city came in and closed them down, they got telephone calls and notes from customers wondering where had they gone. People just do not believe that our government can do and will do the things that it's doing.
Well, you know, the irony of it is, Fred, is that this has happened everywhere else on this earth. And there's something about the cocoon that we've lived in this country where we actually don't believe that it could happen here. It's almost
exactly
as though we think that we're on another planet and we're untouchable. We're only separated by water.
That's right. That's exactly right. You've summarized it totally.
The big trick is,
because our government was conceived in liberty, mm-hmm. we don't think that this government is capable of doing the things that it's doing. And we don't want to believe it.
Well, and the other part of it is, I mean, people have one of two reactions. And when it's so overwhelming and so pervasive, you know, on the one hand, it's sometimes easier just to say, well, it's probably not that. Then when the evidence is overwhelming and or they're presented with, you know, enough information that it breaks through, then people say, well, there's nothing we can do about it.
That's right.
And so I guess we find ourselves, all of us on this call, you know, in that middle ground of how do we make it credible and how do we make it look like something that we can fight?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's right. And as I've said about the foundation, and I think I said it in Reading when I was there last, I said the same thing to those two staff members up in Tel Norte. You know, the prevent defense rarely works. The only thing it prevents is victory. For too long, we have sit back.
Aaron's writing that one down.
I'm writing that one down.
Yeah, we have reacted. We've reacted. We've defended. And what the foundation, what we're trying to do through the foundation is turn that around. We're taking it to the government agencies instead of waiting for them and reacting to what actions they take.
Yeah, because by the time... Well, I mean, it's a little bit like a train, you know. You can hear the whistle in the distance, but by the time you hear it, it's, you know, you better not be tied to the tracks. You're in deep
That's
trouble.
Right.
And
That's
when
exactly.
you can see the headlight, you're down.
Yeah.
Yep. It's pretty much a done deal at that point.
Mm-hmm. So folks sitting out there listening to this, kind of going, okay, here's one more thing I maybe did or didn't know that was kind of off the rails. What are some things, like if somebody was to say, gosh, you know, I heard they're closing all these forest roads and it's this big plan to keep the public out and this, that, and the other. And, of course, you know, the response typically is, no, that's not true. People are out there abusing the forest. They're riding dirt bikes. They're wrecking everything. They're just gonna keep some of the stuff open for all of us. How would you convince somebody that... maybe they don't have our best interest at heart?
Well, I think one of the ways to do that is to consider the following. How many people who use the forest use it not for motorcycles but to go out and camp? Let's take a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout encampment who go out into the forest. They've done it in Idaho for years. And they set up a camping operation where for the weekend they go out and camp. Well, as Sylvia can tell you, that camping will end, has ended. The regulations are not based on the fact that you are causing harm when you're in there. They haven't stopped camping because campers caused harm to the forest, but their regulations require that you can't park more than one, and Sylvia will have to, I know she's got the figures down exactly. You can't park more than a car's width off the road. Now, that means that you simply cannot have vans and car and station wagons and so on that carry tents and things get into the forest in order to camp. It just can't happen. And so all of the things that we've used the forest for, whether you use it often or whether you just drive through and find a place to stop on the side of the road and walk into the forest, or whether you're there to camp, that has ended. You can't do that anymore.
So, Sylvia, what are the details on that?
Well, I was at a mineral show here a couple weeks ago, and these guys were really concerned because where they go out to get a certain kind of rock, they can't get out there anymore.
Jeez.
Yeah, the roads are shut down.
That's just ludicrous.
Sylvia, isn't it one car length off the road? Isn't that the limit to how far you can get off?
Correct, and what they're doing is they're measuring from what they perceive as the edge of the road.
Right.
And so, you know, if you perceive it as one thing and they perceive it as another, you're going by their
word. And that's something that you're going to find with, you know, all these state and federal agencies. It's all interpretation. And their interpretation always prevails.
Correct. And if you go out to gather wood, they say bring a wheelbarrow because you have to park on the road. And if you cut a tree or there's a tree down off of the road, you're not allowed to go out there and get it. You have to pack it all the way.
You better be in shape if you're going to go into the forest. And on that note, we've got a quick break to thank our advertisers. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, KCNR, 1460, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media. Trust me on this one. If you think the Tea Party's going anywhere, you ain't seen nothing yet. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Okay, if you're going to call, you don't have much time. The number is 605-4567. And Sylvia, you wanted to give us some of these crazy measurements that the Forest Service is using when they determine the edge of the road and how long your car is and blah, blah, blah.
Well, yeah, they come up with a tape measure, and from where they perceive the edge of the road is, they give you so many inches to where your tires are, and that's how they determine if you're one car length off the road. One thing that I wanted to mention was the wood gathering. Wood gathering in Shasta Trinity National Forest and in Plumas National Forest, you have to do the same thing. You have to park one car length off of the road. But now in the Lassen, which is contiguous to both of these forests, if you step 1 foot one way or another, you can be in a different forest. The Lassen allows you to drive off the road to wood gather. They will not allow you to drive off the road to look for wood. But if there's a downed tree and you want to go out there and get it, you may drive off the road wherever that tree is, cut it up, put it in your vehicle, and bring it home.
But in our own backyard, you need a wheelbarrow, did you say?
Yeah. You need, you know, if the tree is further than one car length off the road, you have to pack it.
So you better be in shape.
You better be in shape.
If you're going to go visit the forest, you better be physically tough.
Yeah, because you're going to walk.
Well, you have to be
wherever
extra
you want to go.
Physically tough too, because who you're probably going to meet out there once they shut all these roads are going to be
the Mexican cartels.
Yeah, but they'll be in camo, so you probably won't see them until they start shooting at you with automatic weapons. that'll be a clear sign you're too close.
Yeah.
And that's why the sheriffs are all getting involved.
And, you know, we're making fun here, but it really is that serious.
It is.
We're literally...
Well, here's one of the things I think that your listeners can pay attention to, too, when you say that they think maybe people are destroying the forest. The Forest Service has not done any of the things that its own rules require it to do. In finding that there is damage to the forest that they have to take care of. Our forests are in bad shape only for one reason, and that is that the Forest Service has not logged them, has not thinned them, and has not taken care of them the way it should.
Shocking.
And that would explain the catastrophic fires that we have so regularly, because they're filled with fuel.
That's exactly right.
And how convenient that they can now blame this onto people visiting the forest and onto quads and
Oh, I've heard their advertisements that, by the way, we're paying for, and they do blame, what is it, 75? I think that the figure I heard was 75% of forest fires are caused by humans.
Well,
stupid
and the interesting
humans.
Thing about that is that when they say 75% of the fires are caused by humans, still, if a human being causes a forest fire, he doesn't cause a catastrophic forest fire. What makes it catastrophic is the fact that they haven't managed it, that the forests are loaded with this dead wood and dried wood from sick and diseased trees that they will not take out, so that once a fire begins, it isn't just a small fire anymore, it's a catastrophic fire.
Yeah.
And after these fires, they will not allow you to go in and log to take out what good trees are left, so mm-hmm. the next year it sets it right back up for another catastrophic
fire.
So
all the trees they claim to want to save and preserve, they're willing to let burn down.
Correct.
And the habitats and the animals and, you know, a healthy forest isn't a forest that burns itself down.
That's the other thing, you know, that the focus of these folks, I get a kick out of my environmentalist organization friends who talk about protecting the environment, and yet who suffers from the lack of management in the forest? The wildlife suffers.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't take care of the forest, when you don't take care of rangelands and you allow juniper to creep in, the understory is destroyed, and it makes it difficult for all of the wildlife to grow. You can find places where Indian tribes and private landowners have logged the forest and have taken care of clearing it out after a fire, and you'll see wildlife that is just so plentiful it's unbelievable. One of the reasons the deer and the elk come down to private property to eat is there's no forage left for them in the forest.
That's an excellent point.
It sure is. Well, oh, my goodness.
But listen, there's hope. There's hope for all of us. We can do it if we do it individually and together, but if we do it on the ground and we do it at the local level.
And, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how much happens at the local level. And I know that so many people, they look at the federal government and they see that the problem is there and that's what they want to tackle, and they don't realize that the way the federal government is able to control is by implementing things at the local level. The government can the federal government can't control all of America as you know, one group. they have to break it down into manageable bite-sized pieces, and that is at the local level. So that point cannot be driven home enough.
That's exactly right. Everything that is done in D.C., everything has to be implemented locally. And that's where we can stop it. That's where we can have impact on it.
Fred, very quickly, can you give us a rundown on the procedure of coordination? We have the counties here that have invoked coordination. They're doing an excellent job there. But there's been a disconnect on what happens after you invoke coordination and how the public plays such an important part in this by being a coordination committee.
Yeah, the coordination committee is invaluable to the supervisors in California, the commissioners in other states. The supervisors, you have five at the most. They can't possibly know everything that's going on in the forest and on the rangelands and on the ground in their county. The purpose in having an advisory committee or council of people who are actually the users of the forest, the recreation people, the ranchers, the farmers, the water users, retired forest employees. The reason for that is that they see daily, and in their friends and contacts daily, they see what's happening, and they can advise the supervisors on those things. In addition to that, they can support the supervisors. When the supervisors take the position that they want to coordinate, that's just the beginning. They have to have support. That's where your coalitions of citizens come into play. Fill the meeting rooms. When there's a coordination meeting held, the public can't participate. It's a government-to-government meeting, but the public can attend. Under the Brown Act and under a similar act in every state, the meeting between the supervisors and the agency has to be an open meeting. I'm going to tell you that it has real impact on the federal agencies when they walk into a room and see it filled with citizens. It has a real impact. I've seen it for 20 years. I'm not just guessing at these things. I know the impact it has. And that support is critical. The coalitions of citizens can provide information, whether they're on the advisory committee or not. If you have groups, Tea Party groups, for example, can provide information and opinions to the members of the advisory committee and to the supervisors. That's important because that's citizen participation. And remember, the 10th Amendment reserves the rights to the states and to the people. The people wasn't put in there as an afterthought. The people who wrote our Constitution believed that the sole source of government was the people, not the state, not the county, not the federal, but the people. And this is our chance. That's the only hope in this country, is that people as individuals and as organizations of citizens will support their local government. And if a county commissioner, if a county group will not coordinate, find a town that will and then support that town.
Fred, another quick thing here. I think we've got these coordinations going. Plumas County's doing a real good job. The Plumas Forest has come to the table, the Lassen National Forest. But I think people are concerned that all we're going to get out of this is lip service. We're not going to be able to make any changes.
And, Fred, before you jump into that, we've got about a minute to wrap it up.
Okay, real quickly. The impact and importance of coordination is that the law requires those agencies to make their policy consistent. That's the difference between coordination and all of these old public meetings in the past. These coordination meetings will work because the agency has to make changes.
Thank you. All right. So any closing thoughts for the listeners out there? And as always, we always ask our guests to point out something that people can do themselves at their local level. Got about 30 seconds.
Get involved with people like Sylvia in your local area. Get involved in your Tea Party organizations. The Tea Party organizations are the most important thing that's happened in my lifetime.
Thank you for that.
I apologized a long time ago to them because I didn't think it would carry on, and it has. be involved, and then look for people like Sylvia, look for our foundation, look for the way that you can participate in getting your local government to do for you what only it can do.
Absolutely, and go to trademarkamerica.org, and you'll find tons of information there. And if you can't remember that, go to Reading Tea Party, click on the radio show, and it's all there, along with this program in the archives. Thanks, Fred. Thanks,
Mr.
Sylvia.
Mr. Fred Kelly Grant, thank you so much.
Very welcome. I enjoyed it, as I always do.
We'll be back with everybody next week here at We the People. You're listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Wake up high and the dreams that you dream of once.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR Shasta, Redding.